And now for something completely different.
It's a rich man's world. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal. The full story. Real talk about money, markets, life. Now, it's The Real Investment Show with Lance Roberts. Presented by RIA Advisors.
And good morning. It is 6:07 on this pre-Friday Eve edition. A little bit chilly this morning, but...
Not as bad as yesterday.
Absolutely. A few things to talk about this morning. The Federal Reserve out yesterday, Jerome Powell making some very interesting statements. Michael Leibowitz, CFA, our Federal Reserve expert, will join us at 6:15 this morning. And we'll talk all about Fed and some of the more idiotic statements that Jerome Powell made yesterday. I mean, this is the type of stuff that just makes you, what?
I think it's the common denominator is Washington, D.C.
Probably. Yeah. And there's actually a very tight link between what Jerome Powell said yesterday and yesterday, of course, new information about our deficit coming out. So that kind of all ties together. We'll get into that this morning. Interesting news, though. Yesterday, Disney Plus has launched their online streaming service. So they are now in the streaming game.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you know, Disney has a few advantages over, you know, Netflix and other companies that have to try to create, you know, content. They already have a crap load of content. Oh. They have Marvel, which has been, every one of those are blockbuster movies for them. They have all the Pixar movies. They have National Geographic. Did you know that?
I did not realize that Disney had National Geo.
Which I'm excited about, right? Because they, on television, the Science Channel used to actually have good science stuff, and National Geo used to have good stuff on it too. Yeah. So I'm glad to have access to that. That's cool. You know, of course, they have all the Disney movies.
That's three lifetimes worth of material right there.
So they've got a tremendous library.
Oh,
And now we talked about just recently the fact that all these companies, CBS, has their online streaming service, CBS All Access, Paramount movies, the Paramount.
Yes.
They have their own streaming service now, Paramount Television. They actually have a really good series with Kevin Costner called Yellowstone.
Oh yes!
If you haven't seen it's really, really good. It's not a Western. If you think it sounds like a Western, because you call it Yellowstone, but it's about a rancher who has this massive, family ranch, and everybody's trying to get access to his ranch or trying to take his ranch away from him, and it's him fighting the old. It's his old way of being a rancher, and he controls the entire region that he's in. Versus the outside world trying to come in.
Right.
So it's good and gritty, two seasons already. But
who better than Kevin Costner to play that role?
Yeah. He did a voiceover for a movie. My daughter and I watched this movie called Racing in the Rain.
Oh.
And it's about this auto racer. Mm-hmm. He's a car racer. And he gets this dog. And this dog was born to be a racer. And all the dog wants to do is watch racing and grow up. Well, the voice of the dog is Kevin Costner.
Ah.
And of course, whenever they have these dog movies, right? Whether it's A Dog's Purpose or
you
Dog's
got a soft
Journey.
Spot for that, don't you?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, my kids love this stuff. So I wind up watching it with them, and I'm like over there trying to be the manly man. I'm like, sucking back. It's like eyes roll. Yeah, no, right? It's just allergies are acting up again.
It's dusty in here again.
Exactly. Yeah, they get to you anyway. So Disney Plus launched yesterday. They signed up 10 million users.
Really?
In one day.
Wow.
Now, they signed up more in one day than HBO Go has done in 4 years. They have more users in one day than Hulu has. They have more users in one day than Crackle has. I mean, you go on the list, there's only a couple of services that have more users. That's Amazon Prime. And, of course, there's no way to really track the users of Amazon Prime Video because basically you sign up for Amazon Prime for the free shipping and you get Amazon Prime Video with it, right?
Yeah.
So there's – what did you sign up for, the free shipping or the Prime Video and music?
I actually renewed mine this year for the video.
Really?
And not necessarily for the shipping.
Well, as much as my wife shops on Amazon, it's all for the shipping.
Well,
let's be honest
here. That's a bonus.
No, it's not. That's the reason. The video is the bonus. Although they have a good show on too called Goliath with Billy Bob Thornton.
Billy Bob.
Yeah. So anyway, they have a new calculator out this morning. So we talked about this whole bundling issue, right? That individuals are now going to be, you know, interesting because look, $12.99 for Netflix, then Disney Plus $70 a year for Disney Plus, then and that's not even really a fair comparison. $12.99 a month for Netflix times 12 months, so that's $150 a year, right? So $150 a year for Netflix. You got to put these into. If you're going to say yearly, you got to be yearly across the board.
Apples to apples.
Right. So $150 a year for Netflix, $70 a year for Disney. Hulu with no ads is another $144 a year. Throw in HBO. So if you want HBO to get Game of Thrones as an example, that's another $15 a month. So that's another $180 a year. So all of a sudden, you're spending some money that you may not have thought you were actually spending because it's you know, it's $11 here, right? No big deal. $12 over there, no big deal. Adds up. So let's just say, for instance, that you want, as an example, I'm gonna get Netflix, and I'm gonna do the standard, just the standard.
The basic.
I'm not gonna do the premium. I'm gonna do the standard, right? So I'm gonna give up on the 4K movies. I'm gonna pick up Hulu, Amazon Prime, and Disney Plus, and forgot Apple TV. Gotta have Apple TV, right?
Yeah.
Gotta have because everybody's got an Apple. Right, so you got to have Apple TV. Lifetime cost on that over 50 years?
Yeah.
$40,000.
Really? That's entertainment.
So, you know, it adds up pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
And when you start talking about how much you're spending over time, if you took that same amount of money and invested it, you know, the differential between what you're paying for online entertainment and what that could earn for you is massively different. So, but no, it adds up. I mean, you know, all of a sudden it's not just $12.99 here, $12.99 there. It's now $30, $40, $50, $60 a month. So this is why I was saying, you know, I think the next innovation is going to be somebody's going to come along and go, for $50 a month, I'll give you all the services.
That will be the winner.
And guess who that'll be? Xfinity. And that's why we're long the stock. They're just laying in wait right now. Quick break. We'll come back. Michael Lee, what's going to jump us? We're going to talk about the Fed. Lots of stuff the Fed said yesterday. Very important stuff that has a lot to do with what's going on in Washington and your money and your tax dollars, importantly. So we'll be right back after the break, and we'll do that.
Can't catch the whole show now?
Listen to our podcast later
at realinvestmentadvice.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlock. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlock, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab. RIAAdvisors.com.
Get your motor running. Hey, go back to that live shot real quick. Just so if you're watching our live stream right now, I want you to see this live shot of the studio. So it looks like we got Max Headroom hanging out with us this morning. So if you're in your car right now, if you're watching a live shot of our studio on our live stream, we bring in Mike Leibowitz. He's up in he's Nanook from the north this morning, where it's really cold up in Washington D.C. But we bring him in on Skype so we can video him, and so we have this monitor in our studio that's just his head on. And you know, for all you youngsters, by the way, who don't know who Max Headroom is, YouTube it, you'll find it. So you'll get the joke later. And we all say, like, oh yeah, that was funny. Morning.
Thank you, Lance. I love the intro.
Yeah, morning, Max. How are you?
Doing great.
So yeah, it's a brisk 20 degrees. I see you got your sweater on this morning.
Now, aren't you supposed to say thank you for coming out on this very cold morning and talking to us?
Exactly. Thank you for showing up in your basement.
Yeah, what kind of commute is that?
Exactly, right.
It's a good 30 steps.
There you go. You know, and then there's traffic, you got dogs and everything else to navigate, so right. Stuff happens.
Legos.
Anyway, yeah. Good morning, Mike. How are you? Good. So let's talk a little bit yesterday. The Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, making his statement on Capitol Hill yesterday. And, you know, there wasn't anything really, new or exciting about what he said. He didn't say anything earth-shattering. It's pretty much what we expected. We've written some articles recently that the Federal Reserve has now basically thrown the towel in on inflation. They are not going to raise rates again until they see a significant sustained improvement in inflation. There were some interesting comments about the debt, about, you know, the economy, economic growth, kind of foresight. I just kind of want to get, you know, I have some specific questions, but I want to kind of get your takeaway on what you thought about the speech yesterday.
So again, he used a couple words that were very telling. So I guess it was 2 or 3 weeks ago at the Fed meeting, we talked about the three sets of words he used to basically say the Fed is never going to raise rates again. That's not entirely true, but he said we're going to have to see strong, persistent inflation, the likes of which we haven't seen in maybe decades before they raise rates. So basically, he's laying the case that the odds of a rate increase are slim to none, and Slim may have left town already. Yesterday, he made the comment that the Fed is not going to cut rates unless there is a material reassessment of our outlook. So their outlook is improved slightly from what we heard a few weeks ago, but they are still acknowledging that there's a trade war, that there's slowing global growth. That it's an outlook that does have economic growth, but it's not the strongest of economic growth, and it's, you know, in the grand scheme of things, relatively weak. So they are not going to cut rates unless there is a material, the word material stood out to me, reassessment of our outlook. So growth has to, economic activity and growth has to slow down significantly before they cut rates again. Essentially, what the Fed is telling us is that they are not doing anything for a while. And Lance, of course, we both know that that's until the market tells them what they're going to be doing next.
Exactly. But, you know, this does come on the heels, though, of the fact that just earlier this week, President Trump was, you know, kind of on the warpath with the Fed once again, saying that, you know, why isn't the Fed doing what Europe's doing? Why don't we have more rate cuts? Why aren't we running negative rates? You know, it's worked so well for Europe. You know, negative rates have destroyed their banking system. It's destroyed a lot of their economy. Economic growth is extremely weak. You know, I can't really imagine why you would advocate for negative rates when you see the destruction that it's already caused.
Right. It's incomprehensible. I like the fact that he's getting on the Fed. I just think he's getting on the Fed for exactly the wrong reason. Mm-hmm. If I were the president, and it would be hard to get reelected, I get it, but I would tell them to raise rates.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up about raising rates, because Jerome Powell did make a very interesting comment in his speech, and a lot of people didn't pick this up, but he talked about that maybe we need to think about, you know, measuring inflation relative to a basket of goods, which was the way we used to measure inflation before Clinton and the Boskin Commission in the late 90s recalibrated how we measure inflation so we could artificially lower Social Security payments. You know, and so we moved away from that basket of goods. An organization called Shadow Stats does a tracking of CPI based on the old original formula, and inflation in the U.S. is running about 7-8% right now, which when you take a look at things like housing, rental rates, insurance costs, healthcare costs, college tuition costs, etc., those have had very, very sharp increases over the last several years, but yet we don't measure those as part of inflation.
That's right. The whole, and we've talked about this before, but the whole concept of measuring inflation is bunk. It's so ridiculous that they try to put an inflation number to a tenth of a percent out there when it varies greatly by region, by needs, by demographics. There is no number. And to say that it's only running at, you know, less than 2% is insane. They can take a look at my bills. They're certainly, you know, but the thing is, Lance, if you just say, well, let's just say inflation is running at 4 or 5%.
Right.
Let's think about what that means, because we know that nominal economic growth is running at that rate or even less.
Mm-hmm.
That means that if you applied the real inflation number to the economic activity of this country, it has been stagnant and probably negative for the last decade.
Right.
Well, that's how inflation is used. The number of ways it's used, but that's one reason they are incented for a lower inflation figure.
Well, look, and again, going back to Clinton, you know, when this change occurred, one of the primary reasons was to lower Social Security benefit increases. Because, again, every year your Social Security payment is adjusted by the cost of living index, which is adjusted by CPI. So, you know, in a year where we see the cost of living go up just in the normal course of food and gasoline and energy costs, you know, et cetera. I'm not even talking about, you know, insurance or college. Let's just talk about stuff that everybody pays for. Everybody pays for gasoline. Everybody pays for food. Those costs are going up. Housing costs are going up. Utility costs are going up. And then you get a notice from the Social Security says, oh, there was no inflation last year, so you will not be getting an increase to your Social Security payment this year. You know, that's where the real disconnect comes in. And this is why we see so many Americans now, about 85% of the country really struggling just to make ends meet. You know, personal credit card debt is going up, you know, to try to fill the gap between living needs and what incomes people have.
Right, right. It's working against them and they don't even know it. And I think that's why we have this rise of on really both sides of the aisle. That there's discontent in a large percent of the population and they want something different. Whether that was Donald Trump, whether that's socialism, they want something different and they're going to get it.
Yeah. you know, well, and this is also, you know, part of something he said, and this is something I want to get into when we come back, you know, after the break here in a second. But, you know, when he's talking about, you know, the idea of, you know, kind of the Fed, he made some interesting comments about their ability to combat the next recession or the next, you know, economic downturn. And he said that, you know, we can only do so much through monetary policy. A big chunk of this has to come through fiscal policy. And that was an interesting statement because that was exactly what Ben Bernanke told Chuck Schumer during his congressional commentary. You know, back in 2007, 2008, he said, hey, you know, this is really on you guys. You know, y'all have got to do something on the fiscal side. We can only do so much on the monetary side. And Chuck Schumer tells Ben Bernanke, well, you're the only guy in town. You're the only game in town. It's all on you. And it was interesting to hear Jerome Powell say exactly the same message yesterday.
But he had another message, which we'll talk about when we get back.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a little bit about what's going on with the overall direction of government.
It will be certain to make you mad.
Yeah, exactly.
We guarantee that.
Guarantee you're going to be you just pull over now. So there you go. All right, we'll be right back and we'll talk about it. And you won't be happy about it. Mike's right. Don't go. Be right back here on the Real Investment Show. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. Michael Leibowitz, CFA. Be sure to get by our website this morning. We have a new article out talking about can the consumer actually save the economy, right? This is the belief now is that the consumer can keep the economy going despite the fact that CEO confidence is running at, well, some of the most historically low levels. We have an article out discussing that this morning. It's on the website now, realinvestmentadvice.com, and we'll be right back. Another one bites the dust.
Real Investment Show podcasts are now available on iTunes.
Listen anyplace, anytime
at itunes.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisors' free financial planning tool, MyBlock. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome to the show. This morning, 6:33. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. It is the pre-Friday Eve edition of the Real Investment Show. Michael Leibowitz joining us live from Washington, D.C. See, it's more fun to say Washington, D.C. It just sounds more impressive. Michael Leibowitz, CFA. You know, it's interesting, Mike, you're right there in the heart of the whole impeachment hearing process that's been going on for the last couple of days. So
miles from it, but so far from it.
Exactly. But speaking of government, I thought it was very interesting, and we alluded to this just before the break. You know, Jerome Powell makes a comment that, you know, it's really going to be important for the government to have a fiscal response during the next recession because, well, the Federal Reserve has already used up a fair bit of their ammo to battle the next recession. They've already cut rates three times this year. They were only at 2%, 2.25% on interest rates to begin with. So they've already given up a big chunk of that tool, you know, to try to keep the economy going for now, which has limited their ability to fight the next downturn. They're already going back to expanding their balance sheet at a faster clip than they did during QE1 back in 2009. So another tool, policy tool, that's been taken off the table. So it was interesting to hear him say and allude that the government needs to be prepared with some fiscal policy for the next downturn.
So what's fascinating about this is for the last year, we've heard from Powell, Bernanke has also mentioned it, by the way, but also from many other central bankers, that we need to hand the ball off from monetary policy to fiscal policy, meaning that monetary policy, you know, in Europe, negative rates, in Japan, negative rates, in the U.S., very historically extremely low rates. And QE on and off just about everywhere in the world is hitting its limits. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming obvious in Europe and Japan. And it at some point will become obvious here, too. So what they're saying is our limits are we're getting close to our limits. Hey, fiscal guys, that's, you know, governments, Congress, you need to pick up the ball and you need to spend to so the economy can grow. We can't put it all on our shoulders. And Powell has said this to some degree.
Right.
So yesterday, Powell warns that rising debt levels could impair the government from basically spending a lot of money during a recession. And he had the nerve to say that high government debt levels actually restrain private investment, which is very true.
Right.
That's what it does, which hurts productivity. And it, by default, then hurts economic growth.
Right.
Go
ahead.
Go ahead, Lance.
No, I just got this to your point, though. I just wanted to bring up this real quick point here is that we just got into and we just got the first report on our fiscal deficit for 2020. The new we're now into the new fiscal year for the government. We had a $680 billion increase. It was a much larger increase in the deficit than what people had expected it to be. And this pushes us right up on the nudge of running $1 trillion deficit in an economic expansion. So
Let me stop you there for 1 second. The government will tell you that the deficit was $960 billion, $980 billion.
Yeah, close enough.
The amount of debt, the increase in the amount of debt was $1.3 trillion.
Right.
So you know, I can tell my wife that I went out and only spent $40 on beers last night, but when she sees that there's $80 missing from my wallet, she'll know what I spent.
Right.
And that's the way to think about it. It's not an accounting gimmick. The government net, their debt rose by $1.3 trillion. This isn't a recession. then they're spending money like it's in a recession/depression type atmosphere.
Right. Well, and the problem, and to, so now going back, and the reason I cut you off for that comment is to go back to what you said earlier is that, you know, if we do slip into a recession sometime in the next 50 years, you know, we're already running a $1 trillion deficit. So now you're talking about pushing a $2 trillion deficit, the $2.5 trillion deficit, if you get into a more severe economic slowdown. You know, right. this is going to become problematic. And at some point, you know, one of the biggest fears for the financial markets, you know, we're running interest rates right now in the 10-year treasury at 1.8%, 1.9%. You know, if you start trying to push out, you know, another $500 billion, another $1 trillion worth of debt on a regular basis to try to fund your shortfall, there may well come a point that our foreign buyers, you know, China, Europe, Japan, et cetera, of our debt says, yeah, you know, maybe I don't want more of your debt at 1.8%. I think I need something like 2.5 or 3 or 4. That becomes extremely problematic for the economy.
Well, that's where the Fed enters. And that's, I think that's what's going on now. The Fed knows that they have to buy the debt. Mm-hmm. They basically have to print money and buy the debt. And that's one reason we have QE4 today, because after the debt cap limit was raised, the Treasury issued a lot of debt and there was no demand for it. There was demand for it, but just not at levels that the government and that the Fed would like to see. Mm-hmm. So what did they do? They basically started up QE4.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, because this goes back to the whole kind of the repo issue that you and I had talked about earlier this year, earlier last month when the Fed did start in. They came as well, we've got the, you know, there's an overnight funding issue and it's because of tax payments. Interesting article out this morning that we'll find out which banks were in trouble in 2 more years. So in 2 years, they'll release the data that will tell us exactly who was in trouble and who needed money.
Right, right. But here's the bottom line. The Treasury hit the market for like $400 or $500 billion over the last couple months. And that basically, in order for banks to make the loans, for investors to buy it, net-net, money had to be created. And that's what the Fed is doing. They are creating reserves so banks can loan the money to the government. And it's clearly unsustainable. And you have the Fed and every other central banker talking out of both sides of their mouth. The fiscal side has to take the ball from here. They got to start spending to boost economic growth. And then you see Powell warning that too much debt is a problem. And he's telling you the problem. He's telling you that too much debt causes slower economic growth. Is it any wonder that economic growth has been slowing for 30 years? Yeah. As debt has been rising for 30 years? It's because we're spending our money to pay back debt.
Right.
We're not spending it on innovation.
Well, and that was a very important statement that he did make, which was he came right out. I thought it was surprising because you haven't heard a Fed official say this before. He said that the U.S. economy, economic growth has to grow faster than the debt. But it currently takes almost $4 of debt just to create $1 worth of economic growth. So there is literally no way that the economy can grow faster than the debt structure, because everything the government spends, 98 cents of every dollar that comes in from tax revenue goes out just to pay mandatory spending, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt. Everything else has to come from debt. So if you want to do an infrastructure program, that's got to come from debt. If you want to do a rebuild of the nation's grid work, or whatever it is, whatever program you want to fund, it's got to come from debt. So there's literally no way that the debt can grow faster than the economy, because the economy is being driven by debt growth.
Especially when the debt is unproductive.
Right.
And we keep harping on that. If the debt was productive, meaning that it would create economic growth. So let's say the government hands out everyone $100. We're all going to go spend it. The economy will do great for a quarter or two, and then it'll get back to normal. But going forward, we have to pay back that $100 times the whole population. What if instead they said, we're going to take that $100 that we're going to give every person, and we're going to figure out a way to make gas, to make cars go 10 miles more per gallon, something, you know, anything more productive, right. You can pick it. Well, that would pay benefits for years and years to come, right. which would help the economy increase, which would raise taxes, the amount that we, you know, as a not as a percent, but just the amount of tax dollars, and it would lower the deficit.
Right. And this, and look, there's, you know, there's historically good examples of productive investments. The Hoover Dam. Government spent money to build the Hoover Dam. The Hoover Dam provides power, which people pay for, which creates a revenue stream back to the government.
It opened up the whole Southwest. There wouldn't be a Vegas without the Hoover Dam.
Exactly. Tennessee River Valley Authority, another good example. So there are productive, and, you know, rebuilding a road doesn't create a long-term benefit unless that road opens up a new, you know, a new area of the country for innovation and growth, et cetera. But just repairing a road, once the road's repaired, you know, you don't get a whole lot of benefit out of it. So, you know, the government's got to figure out ways. If you're going to borrow money at 2%, you've got to have something that's going to generate a long-term return and pay it back. And unfortunately, every time we borrow money, we spend it on things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. And not that that's a bad thing. It's just that that doesn't, you know, recycling tax dollars in the economy does not create economic benefit.
No, but they're also, they're crowding out private investment. And that's what Powell said yesterday. They're crowding out companies and people from investing in things that are productive because they need the money. They're taking it. They get pretty much first priority to it. And they are stopping companies and individuals from doing productive things with money that would actually help the economy and help the people of the nation.
Exactly. And by the way, the government just passed yesterday a new spending bill that will, you know, make sure that we can keep the government running through December the 20th. Why? Because, well, we can't get a budget in place. And so we've got the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, saying, hey, government, you need to kind of get your act together and start spending money and get the economy growing faster than debt. But I know you can't even get a budget together. Not sure how that's going to happen. Be right back after the break.
Listen to the Real Investment Show podcast from your favorite service. Same show, your schedule at realinvestmentadvice.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlock. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlock, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab. RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back to the show this morning. It is 6:47 on this Friday Eve edition of the Real Investment Show. Michael Leibowitz, live from Washington, D.C., joining us this morning. Talking a little bit about Fed, government policy, and of course, it's interesting, Mike, right now, you know, we kind of just touched on this when you came on the show, you know, impeachment hearings going on. Market doesn't really seem to care too much about impeachment. You know, this whole idea is kind of more a show and go at this point, as you and I have discussed previously. And we did touch on this yesterday, saying that, you know, really whatever happens in the Congress, you know, does Congress impeach the president? Okay, sure. It'll never get through the Senate, so it doesn't really change anything. But we do waste a lot of time and money doing this and you know, not doing things productive, like, you know, passing a budget.
Right. But, Lance, the market doesn't care about anything.
Yeah.
Right. Hong Kong is falling. Hong Kong is a huge problem. Market doesn't care. The trade deal is not going well. The market doesn't care. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that German GDP, Germany is basically in a recession. They barely missed it by 0.1%. Japan's growth was 0.2%. These are, you know, two of the biggest economies in the world. China is slowing rapidly. Mm-hmm. Market doesn't care. Doesn't care about anything except that the Fed is essentially pumping up the market with their actions.
Right. And again, dude, but, you know, that's not really surprising, right? I mean, because after QE1, QE2, QE3, the markets went up. Right. So, you know, we've kind of trained investors now. It's almost like Pavlov's dogs, right? Where the Fed rings the bell. Hey, dinner time, QE4 is here. Let's go buy stocks. But the one thing here is that this, you know, the environment now is vastly different. And, you know, in QE1, when the Fed started interventions then, you know, the markets were deeply oversold. Valuations on stocks were about 13 times earnings. Dividend yields were running about 2.5-3%. And, you know, there was just this very deep depression about stock ownership. Nobody wanted to own stocks. Nobody believed in the economy. Everybody believed the economy was about to fall apart and the world was going to zero. You know, so you had a lot of pent-up demand. So when QE1 hit the markets, QE2 hit the markets, you know, that brought investors back in the market. There was a lot of pent-up demand, a lot of, you know, money that was not invested in equities at that point. So there was this big, you know, this big push in the markets. Now you take a look at the economy and you know, we've got, you know, record low levels of cash by investors. You've got, you know, pretty much valuations trading near 30 times earnings on a trailing basis. So, you know, lots of excess valuations. Everything's kind of diametrically opposed to what it was in 2009, 2010, 2011. But yet investors think the same outcome is going to occur by the Fed doing the same action.
Right, right. It bodes well until it doesn't. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, as long as everyone believes in this fairy tale that QE will support the market through whatever news comes, It will probably work and the market will grind higher. But it's hollow. Corporate earnings have been declining. They were boosted recently by the tax cut, but that the benefit of that, as far as growth goes, is long gone. The economy is expected to be 1% or lower by both the New York Fed and the Atlanta Fed. They both have expectations now of 1% or lower. There is no economic growth. Corporate margins are shrinking. People, investors, though, are just buying, you know, they're paying more and getting less.
Well, it's the fear of missing out, right? You know, the last time that the Fed did QE, the market went up, and I certainly don't want to miss out this time. And, you know, I tweeted out a chart this morning showing the valuations between the S&P 100 and the S&P 500, and the valuation gap is getting very, very large. And what that means, I know that's a little bit technical, kind of, you know, financial, you know, nonsense, but all that means is that money's crowding in to fewer and fewer stocks. Everybody's, you know, pretty much everybody's buying Apple, Microsoft, you know, Facebook, not buying so much of the other companies really in the index. So the breadth or the participation in the market is becoming much more narrow. And that's money crowding and hiding into fewer assets that typically kind of, you know, mark the top of bull markets, not the beginning of new ones.
Right, right, right. And we're, you know, another odd sign is IPOs. The prices of IPOs have been collapsing, which is, that's something similar to what we saw in 2000. And, you know, in the years leading up to 2000, 2001, IPOs were all the rage, and whatever they were IPOing would just, the stock would just go gangbusters.
Right.
And then towards the very end, those IPOs were falling apart. And that's what's going on today as well, is that people are finally seeing that these companies, many of which are not profitable and some of which will never be profitable, are nothing more than Ponzi schemes.
Right. Well, you know, WeWork obviously is the, you know, we've talked about, you know, that company here on the show a few times now, is, you know, probably the hallmark of, you know, kind of market greed and exuberance. You know, here's a company that had no path to profitability, just burning cash left and right. And their business model was not anything unique or innovative or technology driven. They portrayed themselves as a tech company, but only because they had a tech look in the rental space that they were, you know, their office space they were renting out. But basically, it was a real estate play, which had very low margins. And, you know, investors finally woke up and said, hey, wait a second, you know, what am I actually paying for here? And that's become a huge boondoggle for SoftBank. You know, they're going to lose a lot of money on this deal. JP Morgan's tied in this deal as well. Probably going to be an impact on their books as well.
And they're also, WeWork is the largest renter of space in New York, in London, and I forgot some of the other cities, but some big cities in America and around the world. And it will have a drastic effect on those real estate markets.
So, you know, and I guess just kind of, you know, coming back to the Fed here and talking about fiscal policy versus monetary policy, you know, the issue is that, you know, it was interesting when, you know, Trump, prior to Trump being elected president, right, he actually sent out a tweet saying that when Obama was running a $1 trillion deficit, that was a national security issue. Now we're running a $1 trillion deficit and it's the greatest economy ever. You know, politicians always run on this platform of, especially conservative politicians, always run on this platform that, oh, we're going to balance the budget. You know, we're going to be fiscally responsible. And of course, when they all get up to Washington, it's just kind of, a spending frenzy that kind of goes out the window. You know, there doesn't really seem to be any ability or desire or any mention really of wanting to actually try to structure the debt. You know, we want Donald Trump yesterday talking about wanting to provide a 15% tax cut to average Americans. Great, no problem. Give tax cuts to everybody. That's awesome, but that lowers your revenue for the government. And when you're already spending 96, 97, 98 cents on the dollar just to pay for mandatory benefits, you know, cutting taxes again is going to give you an incremental boost to the economy, if at all, but B, just makes your fiscal funding problem even worse.
Right, right. They're just games to push the economy up for a quarter or two or three. It's political expediency, mm-hmm. and you're right. It's both sides of the aisle, and whoever has control of the Congress is the least fiscally responsible, and the other party seems to be the more fiscally responsible, and then it flips back and forth. And, you know, it's a lesson to all voters on, you know, whatever your belief, that these guys need to get control of the deficit or we're going to have big problems, because the Fed is already funding the U.S. government by printing money.
Right.
That has never ended well in the history of man. And we're going back thousands of years now.
Right. Well, and again, going back to the fiscal policy statement that, you know, Jerome Powell made, you know, one of the rising kind of pieces of commentaries of late has been talking about modern monetary theory, which is basically this monetary theory that debts and deficits don't matter, just issue all the debt you want. And as long as you don't have inflation, you don't have any problem. But, you know, it really is more than that, because it really comes down to the buyer of the debt ultimately, because you've got to sell the debt. To issue debt, you've got to have a buyer. And the question becomes, you know, exactly how much debt can the Fed actually buy before it becomes problematic. So, you know, but this idea of the government needs to do more is simply a function. Basically, the Fed telling the government, hey, just go print more debt because we'll buy it because we don't have a choice. But y'all got to do more.
Right. And then what really gets me recently is people that tell you they're not printing money.
Yeah.
And technically, they're not printing money. They're putting reserves in the system. But look, the government just borrowed $1 trillion. Where did that money come from? Mm-hmm. It doesn't come out of thin air. It came out of somewhere. And that's because the Fed is printing reserves, which is essentially the fodder for printing money.
Right.
And they create money. And so, the more money there is, the less it's worth. And the more inflation you get. Now, whether the inflation is hidden by the statistics is one thing. But there is no doubting that the more money there is and the more money there will be, the more inflation and the more social strife we're going to have.
Yeah. And look, and we have a chart. So if you go to our website, realinvestmentadvice.com, I want to direct you to one very important chart in our Tuesday article, which is our Technically Speaking Tuesday article, on charts that you don't want to show the bulls, right? Because you need somebody to sell to first. But we have a chart in there of euro dollar deposits. Now, everybody's going to go, what the hell is that? But that's basically foreign banks, foreign entities, putting their currency into dollar-denominated deposits. You know, and the reason this is an important chart is because that level is now at a record level high throughout history. It's never been any higher. And the point about this is that money is hiding in U.S. dollars, which means it ultimately winds up in U.S. treasuries, which, you know, gives the ability of the Fed to have some cover here. But if that ever reverses, and this is the one big thing about inflationary pressures and interest rates, et cetera, if at some point our foreign buyers say, you know, I'm really not interested in it, I don't believe in the economic stability of the country, and that reverses to a major degree, we could be into real problems in terms of talking about inflationary pressures, interest rate rises, which has tremendously negative effects for the economy long term.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's a disaster for the economy. If the Fed has to raise rates, if the Fed has to reduce their balance sheet because of inflation, they basically, unlike the 60s and 70s, cannot fight inflation without causing a huge depression.
Yeah. And this is the tightrope that we walk right now. So Michael Leawood, CFA, thanks so much for joining us today. That wraps up the Real Investment Show. Look, we've got a couple of articles on this on the website, and we've got some more coming out over the next week talking about these specific issues. So make sure and get by the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Be sure to read Tuesday's articles, our Technically Speaking post, on why we just recently added a short position to our portfolios just to hedge some of our long. But there's also more to that story that is concerning on a longer-term basis. Also, an article out this morning talking about, can the consumer actually continue to support the economy? That's on the website as well. So again, all at the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Send us your questions and comments, emails, whatever we can do to help you. Always happy to do it. Realinvestmentadvice.com. Stick around. Chris Salcedo is coming right up. All the things I can do.